We believe that this is the inerrant word of the one and only true and living God. It is the only infallible rule for our faith and its practice. So hear now the word of our God from Acts chapter 17, beginning in verse 16. Now, while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him as he saw that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be there. Some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers also conversed with him. And some said, "What does this babbler wish to say?" Others said, "He seems to be a preacher of foreign divinities," because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection. And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? For you bring some strange things to our ears. We wish to know, therefore, what these things mean." Now, all the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there would spend their time in nothing except telling or hearing something new. So Paul, standing in the midst of the Areopagus, said, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in every way you are very religious. For as I passed along and observed the objects of your worship, I found also an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.' What therefore you worship as unknown, this I proclaim to you: the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth, does not live in temples made by man, nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way toward him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being. As even some of your own poets have said, 'For we are indeed his offspring.' Being then God's offspring, we ought not to think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image formed by the art and imagination of man. The times of ignorance God overlooked, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent, because he has fixed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed, and of this he has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead. Now when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, but others said, 'We will hear you again about this.' So Paul went out from their midst. But some men joined him and believed, among whom also were Dionysius the Areopagite and a woman named Demaris and others with them." The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever. You know, this section of the creed, specifically that we believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, would seemingly be the most benign, the easiest tenet of the creed to confess. After all, who among us could look at the world around us and not believe that someone created it? It has always baffled me that there are people who are self-deceived enough to call themselves atheists. Now, I do not say this in a condescending manner, just in a somewhat perplexed manner. Because when I was a teenager and I had seen a darker side of the church that I had never been exposed to before. Nothing too extreme, just people being very unkind toward one another. I wanted to be an atheist. I didn't want any part of this God whose followers treated each other like garbage. But I couldn't do it. I remember sitting in my room at my parents' house, angry at God and saying I didn't believe and knowing full well that yes, I did. I was just like what Cornelius Van Til describes as the little girl who slaps her father in the face, but in order to do so, she has to sit on his lap. Because in order for me to be so mad at God that I denied he existed, well, that sort of assumes that God is there, doesn't it? C.S. Lewis put it this way. He said that in his own intellectual journey, he reached a point where he came to the conclusion that there was no God, and he was mad at that God for not existing. The fact that our God created heaven and earth should be self-evident because it is. After all, in Romans chapter 1, what does Paul say? He says, "For what can be known about God is plain to mankind, because he has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse." The fact that our God created heaven and earth is self-evident in the things that have been made. And yet, although mankind knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. I have to wonder if, as Paul sat in Corinth writing that letter to the church at Rome, he was thinking about this. Just imagine being a Jew. Not just a Jew, but a Pharisee. Not just a Pharisee, but a Hebrew of Hebrews, Paul called himself. And walking into Athens. Luke says that the city was full of idols. And in fact, to this day, when you go and visit Greece, where does everybody want to go? The old pagan temples. And Paul looked around and saw this vanity, this foolishness. And yet, who were the people propounding these false gods, these explanations of the universe? That actually, in most cases, the Greeks believed that the universe had no beginning, that matter was just eternal. So not only did they deny that God had made heaven and earth, they denied that any being had made heaven and earth. The king of their gods, Zeus, he had a father. Actually, if you know the story, he killed and ate his father. Gross. And yet, the people that believed all of this, they were called the philosophers. What is philosophy? Well, you know the second part of that word, Sophia, it means wisdom. Philosophers, well, you can hear that in a word like Philadelphia. What is Philadelphia? It's the city of brotherly love. The Phil in Philadelphia is the word for love. So philosophy is the love of wisdom. And claiming to be wise, they worship so many gods that they actually set up an altar in case they missed one. Because that takes care of it. Like, you show up before God on judgment day and you say, "Sorry, bro, we had an altar in case we missed you." And so Paul goes to the Areopagus. Actually, he's sort of compelled to go to the Areopagus because people think that he's proclaiming some strange things. And he says, "Men of Athens, I perceive that in every way you are very religious." That goes back to that knowledge of God that he talked about in Romans 1. They know that there is some sort of higher power. But though they're very religious, they didn't know God. They worshiped him as an unknown God. Now, if you read the last of the Chronicles of Narnia books, C.S. Lewis seems to take sort of a glimmer of hope in this, that perhaps if you worship the unknown God, maybe you're actually giving worship to the one true God. But that's not how Paul seems to be taking this, because Paul could just say, "Yep, that's the one. Good job, guys. You're worshiping the right God. Just stop worshiping all these other gods." No, he actually says, you don't know this God. I need to tell you about him. And what is the first thing that Paul says that they need to know about this unknown God? He is the God who made the world and everything in it, being Lord of heaven and earth. He goes on to say many other things, but where does Paul start? It is that our God made heaven and earth, the seas and all that is in them. From one man, he made every nation of mankind. So see, he goes back to creation later on. This again was most likely combating the prominent philosophies of the day, which I should say, there were two major philosophies. There was one that held that matter was eternal and one that held that matter was evil. That really, it was all the idealistic forms that were the good stuff. And at one point, there was an evil being, a demiurge that created matter. And so those were the two of the major theories that were going on at the time. And so in one, there was no ultimate creator, and in the other, the creator was bad. And he says, not only is there a creator, but you should worship him because he gives you everything that you have and everything that you need. This teaching that our God made heaven and earth was controversial in Moses' day. It was controversial in Paul's day. And unfortunately, though it baffles my mind, there are many who deny this even today. And yet the truth remains unchanged that in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. In Moses' day, there were those who worshiped the sun. That's why in the creation account, it doesn't say God created the sun, because the word for sun was the word for the sun God. Instead of calling it the sun, he calls it the great light. And there were those that worshiped the moon, and he does the same thing. There were those that worshiped the stars. And so, did you catch that? It's like a throwaway line. How many millions and billions of stars are there that we don't even know about? How many thousands and millions of galaxies? And Moses says, "Oh yeah, he made the stars." And we all fight and argue about the days of creation, and what does it mean? Is it just a framework? Like in the first 3 days, he made kingdoms, and in the second 3 days, he made rulers over those kingdoms? Is it just a polemic against the ancient false gods that Moses was trying to demonstrate that Yahweh was sovereign over them? Is it a literal 6 days wherein God made everything the way Moses said he did? And by the way, the answer to all of that is yes. It's not either or. But what is the important thing to take from the Genesis account? Did you catch it? In the beginning, God created. The Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. God said, God saw, God separated, God called. God said, God made, God called, God said. Do you detect a theme here? What is Genesis 1 about? Is it about the age of the earth? Or is it about God? It is about the God who made you and created you in his image that you might worship and glorify him. We believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. For Christians, this is the word of the Lord. And thanks be to God. Let us pray.